Montana political leaders are not happy with the decision to delay approval of the Keystone Pipeline. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also tell you why a group of Montana health professionals are asking Governor Steve Bullock to support new limits on carbon emissions. And tonight on Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program, News Director Sally Mock talks with Lee Newspaper reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison about Montana's primary races for U.S. House and Senate. Montana officials are condemning a new delay in the decision whether to approve construction of an oil pipeline from Canada. The U.S. State Department said today it is giving federal agencies more time to review the Keystone XL pipeline. Part of the pipeline would run through Montana, and reaction was swift from Democrats and Republicans. Democratic U.S. Senator John Walsh called on President Barack Obama to show leadership and end the uncertainty by making a decision. Republican U.S. Representative Steve Daines, who was Walsh's likely opponent in November's Senate election, accused the Obama administration of basing its decision on politics. Democratic Senator John Tester also says it's time for the administration to approve the pipeline. Democratic Governor Steve Bullock says the pipeline has been pending for 5 years and that Montana's economy would grind to a halt if he made decisions that way. And in other news from around the state, a group of 50 health professionals from around Montana are urging Governor Steve Bullock to support proposed limits on carbon emissions. In a letter to the governor, they argue carbon pollution causes a serious risk to public health. Missoula physician Paul Smith says the health effects are getting worse.
They definitely are multiplying. If you look at the rates of lung disease in the United States, and asthma, of course, is the one that everybody talks about most frequently because it's the most frequent lung disease. But adult COPD, newborn lung diseases, premature births, those things are also related to carbon pollution from especially coal-burning plants.
The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed limits on carbon emissions from future coal-burning power plants and is expected to also propose limits on existing plants. The coal industry says that would cause plants to shut down, devastate their industry, and harm both the state and national economy. Smith says they're forgetting the other economic costs.
And that's externalized cost of increased health care. And those are substantial, and those get ignored in the rhetoric that fossil fuel burning industries use. If you look at asthma cost alone for children, it's $6 to $8 billion per year. So one way or the other, we pay. Question is whether or not we pay up front to have it cleaned up and then don't have the health effects, which by and large affect people that have no choice about it, or if we go ahead and pollute our air and our water streams and suffer the consequences.
Smith says he understands politics play a role in the decisions, but he says people want clean air and clean water.
And I think even more importantly, they want that for their children. And this is really going to affect the next generation worse than it's affecting us. We are already seeing effects on the present population. And what we're doing to our children is going to be worse than what we're doing to ourselves.
The letter to Governor Bullock is signed by 50 doctors, nurses, and other health professionals from around the state. The Ravalli County Attorney is recommending commissioners wait for the full results of an audit before filing an official misconduct lawsuit against the county's embattled treasurer. The lawsuit would allow the county to remove her from the payroll. County Attorney Bill Fulbright said yesterday he believed it would be prudent to wait before suing Valerie Stamey, who was appointed interim treasurer in September and placed on paid leave in January after failing to file several reports. Commissioners say the dispute and investigation has cost taxpayers $70,000, including Stamey's ongoing pay and pay for retired Beaverhead County treasurers to help sort through the backlog of work. Commissioner J.R. Imond said he was frustrated by the county's inability to address the issue, but said he agreed that, quote, a little bit of caution, end quote, was a good idea. Montana's largest mining company says its precious metals production rose modestly, while recycled metal volumes dropped sharply in the first quarter of 2014. Stillwater Mining Company reported that platinum and palladium production from the company's two mines in the Beartooth Mountains increased by more than 3,000 ounces. That's up 2.8% over the same period last year. but volumes of precious metals recycled fell by more than 50,000 ounces. The company blamed the 34% decline on temporary weather-related issues. The Billings-based company this week also announced the resignation of Kevin Scheel, vice president of mining operations since 2011. No reason was given except that Scheel would be pursuing other interests. A conference call with investors is planned for May 1st. Montana's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate held steady at 5.1% in March as both the number of available jobs and the workforce increased. Montana has seen the addition of 7,450 jobs in the first 3 months of the year. The Montana Department of Labor and Industry's chief economist Barbara Wagner is pleased with the first quarter's strong job growth.
That's about the type of job growth we see in a full year, and we've already seen it in our first quarter, so we've really gotten off to a great start.
Montana added 2,431 jobs in March, including payroll jobs, agricultural jobs, and the self-employed, while the labor force increased by 2,450 workers.
Jobs are being gained in every single industry. Our monthly data that's available just right now, like for our monthly unemployment rate, there's not a great amount of detail about what type of industries those job gains are coming from. We do have some data, but we don't get final data and stronger indicators until later on, usually about 6 months after the employment occurs. But we are seeing strong job growth across most industries.
Wagner says Montana's construction industry is showing signs of recovery,
which is really welcoming to see. Most all industries except construction had seen some job gains in the last couple of years in 2012 and 2013, but construction has been really, really slow to recover, and that's a fairly big employing industry. So it's very nice to see some recovery in the construction industry.
The national unemployment rate in March was 6.7%. State wildlife officials in northern Idaho say poachers are killing far more game animals than wolves. Officials tell the Lewiston Tribune that last year in northern Idaho, they confirmed poaching of 30 elk, 4 moose, 13 mule deer, and 57 white-tailed deer. Officials say a realistic detection rate is 5%, meaning poachers are likely killing about 600 elk, 80 moose, 260 mule deer, and 1,000 whitetail. Idaho Fish and Game District Conservation Officer Barry Cummings says many people don't report wildlife crimes because they don't consider it a crime against them. The fine in Idaho for legally killing an elk is $750, while the fine for legally killing a moose is $10,000.
Welcome to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's Capitol reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Malk.
Well, Mike, the most visible race, of course, is the U.S. Senate seat that has been vacated by Senator Max Baucus and is now held by John Walsh, who was, of course, appointed by Governor Steve Bullock. There's still debate about whether that appointment is going to hurt or help him.
You know, that's a very good question, and it's certainly helping him in terms of fundraising. I mean, he's been able to raise a lot of money. Since he's been senator, in his first 3 months of the year, I think he raised, you know, almost $1 million, which is pretty impressive. But on the other side of it, I sense a lot of discontent out there among Democrats, for starters. I was traveling with the other candidates last week, and there's a fair amount of discontent among Democrats just saying, hey, why did Walsh get this thing? And why should we support him? And is he the best candidate to go against Steve Daines, who they know will be the Republican nominee? So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword at this point.
Well, he is being challenged in the primary by a former banker and now rancher, Dirk Adams, and former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger. But neither of them have the establishment party support or the same kind of war chest.
No, they certainly don't. And Mr. Adams, though, is putting a fair amount of his own money into the race. He's loaned his campaign almost $250,000 and put another $30,000 of his own money into it. I just think that the fact that he's so unknown among voters and Democrats is going to be very hard to overcome for him. Although I think he's an intelligent guy and an articulate guy, has a lot of interesting things to say, but that complete lack of name recognition, I think, is just tough to overcome in so short a period. Bollinger, on the other hand, has a name recognition. He just doesn't have any money. Nobody's giving any money. He's put in a little bit of his own money. I think what's happening is that, you know, the powers that be are telling everyone, look, you better give money to Walsh. Don't give money to these guys. They're not going to win. I think Bollinger, you know, I think he actually still has a chance to possibly even beat Walsh. It's a long shot, certainly. But, you know, he is widely known within the party and across the state.
Well, Walsh is emphasizing his military career, of course, and here's a TV ad he has on the air.
A lifetime spent protecting Montana. That's why Steve Bullock picked John Walsh to serve as Montana's lieutenant governor and U.S. senator. Together, they passed a tough new law cracking down on child abuse and balanced our state's budget. While too many politicians in Washington have forgotten their oath and put their own interests first, John's working to do what's right, cutting government waste while protecting veterans and seniors. John Walsh, Montana Courage.
I'm John Walsh, and I approve this message.
And of course, Mike, a lot of safe themes in that ad, veterans and seniors and budgets being balanced and so on.
Yeah, this is what we've had so far from Walsh is pretty vague stuff. I mean, he has sponsored a bill on cybersecurity to beef up your protection against spying and those sorts of things from the government. But in terms of other things, you know, talking about protecting veterans and seniors and cutting the budget, I mean, this is just, you know, very general stuff that's certainly poll-tested. And he also mentioned a couple other things there, you know, balancing the state budget. Well, you have to do that if you're the governor and the lieutenant governor. That's required by the Constitution. And the child abuse bill, you know, that's, I think I know what bill they're talking about, but I don't recall that being made a big deal of during this session at all.
Well, on the Republican primary side, Congressman Steve Daines has the biggest war chest and lots of name recognition now. And even though he has two challengers, Susan Cundiff of Missoula and Champ Edmonds, he's by far the front runner.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that Steve Daines is going to win the primary by a large margin. He's got the support of just about everybody in the Republican Party. The Tea Partiers have endorsed him. And he's going to be a very tough candidate to beat in the general election, I think.
Well, his latest television ad emphasizes his strong business background.
I'm Steve Daines, and I spent 28 years in business creating jobs. In the real world, if you don't do your job, you don't get paid. But that's not how it works in Washington. That's why the very first bill I introduced was called the Balanced Budget Accountability Act. It says if Congress doesn't balance the budget, then they shouldn't get paid. No balanced budget, no paycheck. I'm Steve Daines, and I approve this message because Washington needs accountability and some Montana common sense.
And, of course, Congressman Daines could probably afford to forego his congressional salary, but this has good, solid Republican themes in it.
It certainly does. You know, talking about Washington being broke and wasting all of our money, you know, we need some good common sense back in D.C., just like Montana business people have. You know, how can you go wrong with that? I think what's going to happen, though, is that Democrats and people who want to defeat Daines are going to say, okay, let's talk about your voting record. Let's talk about the fact that your voting record so far is probably places you among the most conservative House members that Montana's ever had. And that's not necessarily bad. There's a lot of conservative people in Montana. But that's what the focus is going to be, to talk about where he really stands in the political spectrum and whether that is what Montanans, many of whom are independents, want to support.
And Chuck, the U.S. House race in Montana is less visible, but certainly intriguing. And on the Democratic side, we have a political newcomer, John Lewis, and a former public service commissioner and perennial candidate, John Driscoll.
Yes, John Lewis is the clear choice of the Democratic establishment, and he's trying to avoid happened to him what happened to Jim Hunt in 2008 when Driscoll got in the race late, spent zero money, and upset Hunt in the primary. And I think Lewis has taken some lessons from that as they're running a more aggressive primary, and he's raising a lot of money. He's raised about nearly $700,000 so far.
And, of course, Mr. Lewis was on the staff of Senator Max Baucus for many years, a chief aide to him, and the opposition in the general election, if he were to win the primary, would make a big deal out of that.
I think so. We're already getting materials from the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee trying to tie him to the Affordable Care Act and other pieces of legislation that are at least at the very least controversial.
And on the Republican side of the House primary, we have five candidates: Elsie Arnson, Corey Stapleton, Drew Turiano, Ryan Zinke, and Matt Rosendale. But a couple of those are winning the money race, Chuck.
Zinke is doing an amazing job raising money. He's raised $900,000 so far and put none of his own money in. Rosendale's raised about $650,000, but about $500,000 is his own money that he lent the campaign. And Stapleton's raised about $375,000. So it's in the money race, it's really between Rosendale and Zinke, but Zinke has the edge. He's got a much bigger ending fund balance as of the latest reports.
Mr. Rosendale has a new television ad that is bound to create some buzz, and the visual of it is Mr. Rosendale standing out in the middle of a field being tracked by a government drone.
I'm Matt Rosendale, and this is how I'd look from a government drone.
And this is what I think about it. The federal government is too big and too powerful. More taxes and regulations put Montana families out of work. Spying on our citizens, that's just wrong. I'm Matt Rosendale, and I approve this message because I'm ready to stand tall for freedom and get Washington out of our lives.
That was Mr. Rosendale shooting the drone out of the sky, presumably. And I suspect, Chuck, this is an ad that may end up on The Daily Show.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I did a little story on it the other day, and I see a lot of the national news organizations are doing stories on it now, too. It's an interesting ad in a couple of respects. The opposition to government spying on citizens certainly crosses party lines. You've got everyone from the ACLU to conservative groups saying we do not want any more of the spying on citizens. It also plays to, the Montana love of guns, and he pulls his rifle out and fires a shot. And I don't know if this was part of the message, but Zinke has been affiliated with a drone business. Now, I think that's really sort of subtle, but maybe not intended, but it hits on a lot of levels.
And another House Republican candidate, Corey Stapleton, also has an ad that I think some will view as provocative.
Hi, I'm Corey Stapleton. I learned growing up here and at the Naval Academy, you get knocked down, get up and fight back. Seems President Obama underestimates Montana if he thinks we're just going to stand by and watch him dismantle our country. Around here, folks are upset. They're fed up with being lied to and tired of a government that keeps spending us into debt. I'm Corey Stapleton, fourth generation Montanan, Navy veteran, proud conservative, and I approve this message.
And, of course, this ad is going after a favorite Republican target, President Obama.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of that in other candidates' ads, I'm sure, in the House, other Republican candidates. And especially so-called Obamacare. That'll be a frequent target. And another one, of course, is the failure to balance a budget, although I think I would say there's plenty of blame to be passed around that in both parties. So I don't think that's exclusively a one that you can criticize the president on.
Well, there are only 6 more weeks until the June 3rd primary, and one assumes that the public will start paying attention to these races pretty soon. Mike, what do you think?
That is the question about primary races, also in an off-year election. The turnout is going to be low regardless, and the primary turnout could be really low, although I think we do have some interesting races. I've noticed just talking to people that they're starting to talk about the Senate race, but when I mention someone like, Dirk Adams, people go, oh, who's that? So there's a lot of days left for people to get their name out there, and I think a lot of people still don't know who the candidates are, but we're going to see a fair amount of money spent on this primary.
Well, we will reconvene next Friday and every Friday after that until the primary so that we can maybe add to the discussion of the upcoming June primary election. And guys, we'll talk again next week. Thanks.
Okay, look forward to it.
Thank you, Sally.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mock. We hope you'll join us next week for another discussion of the week's political news.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be partly cloudy with lows in the 20s. Tomorrow expect mostly sunny skies and highs in the upper 50s to mid-60s. Sunday should be partly cloudy with a slight chance of rain in the morning and highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. For central Montana, there is a high wind warning in effect until midnight tonight for the Rocky Mountain Front, Eastern Glacier, and Toole County. Tonight should be mostly cloudy in the evening with a slight chance of rain and snow in the evening with lows 30 to 35 degrees, and west wind gusts could reach up to 75 miles per hour. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 65 degrees. Sunday, look for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain with highs 50 to 60 degrees, and west wind gusts could reach up to 55 miles per hour. For southwest Montana tonight, it should be partly cloudy with a slight chance of snow in the evening and lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 65 degrees, and Sunday should be partly cloudy with highs 50 to 60 degrees. Currently in our listening area, Helena is 45 degrees with mostly cloudy skies and windy conditions. In Kalispell, it's cloudy and 50 degrees. Butte has 42 degrees under partially cloudy skies. Great Falls is partly cloudy with 50 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under mostly cloudy skies is 49 degrees. It's 53 and windy in Dillon. In Hamilton, it's cloudy and 52 degrees. Libby has 45 degrees with cloudy conditions. And in Polson, skies are cloudy and it's 49 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Matt Elsasser.
Montana, Matt Elsasser here with Recycle Montana. Next Tuesday, April 22nd, is Earth Day. Earth Day is a great time to discuss day-to-day opportunities to reduce our impact on the planet and build community. The three R's of reduce, reuse, and recycle are always a great way to start the discussion. Reducing our waste by bringing our own mug to the coffee shop or donating our used household items to a local thrift store is pretty straightforward. Recycling is a bit more complicated. Recycling creates a valuable resource from what we would otherwise waste. Quality control is essential, and partnerships are needed to get recyclables from the recycling bin to a new product in the market or to find a permanent end use in construction or infrastructure. We can all do our part by knowing and following the guidelines of the recycling programs we utilize. The better informed we all are when we recycle, the more effective existing and future programs can be at collecting recyclables and finding the most valuable use for the recycled resource we create. Glass recycling provides a great example of the importance of quality control. Community glass recycling programs are designed for container glass. Container glass includes bottles and jars one would find at a grocery store, such as a bottle of wine or a glass jar of salsa. The many other types of glass, ranging from wine glasses, plates, and coffee mugs to light bulbs, home windows, and windshields, have different composition than container glass consisting of jars and bottles. These other types of glass, generally durable goods designed for long-term use, may have specialized recycling programs at their point of sale. Many successful Montana recycling enterprises start with well-sorted container glass. In Livingston, pulverized glass processed up to a quarter inch with no sharp edges, and sand is used in public work projects, landscaping, and pipe bending. Pulverized glass from rural communities was used as road base in Interstate 15 near Boulder. Glass in Helena is recycled into cement at a nearby plant in Montana City. Glass collected by a retailer in Bozeman is collected and crushed into large boxes by a local recycling company. The glass is shipped by truck to Salt Lake for manufacturing a variety of products, including insulation. Montana glass ships by rail to Golden, Colorado, to become new bottles. Glass contains embodied energy and a variety of resources. Silica, or sand, is the major ingredient, but sodium carbonate, or soda ash, lime, and other additives can make up more than a quarter of glass containers. Such materials are mined and shipped great distances today. Glass container recycling provides a valuable base material to be used with less energy in future manufacturing as an aggregate in local construction and public works projects, and, of course, in new bottles. Reusing bottles, as done by a local brewery in Missoula, maximizes those benefits. Keeping non-container glass, other recyclables, and trash out of glass collection bins is essential for successful glass recycling. Small safety rings and labels are usually okay, but metal lids should be recycled with like metals, and corks should be removed. The glass should be clean and stored without lids from the start. Cleaner, properly sorted material yields a higher quality product that can be recycled into a greater variety of commodities to be used again. While the specific guidelines vary, this is true with all recycling. Recyclers compact and bale the most common recycled items, such as cans, cardboard, and plastic for shipping. Glass can only be crushed, requiring handling more similar to construction aggregate. Whether separating recyclables at a local drop-off site or using a single-stream recycling bin where compactable recyclables are mixed to be separated later, glass requires different handling and equipment. The glass cannot be separated by downstream processing as well as the compactable recyclables and can be, at best, more expensive and difficult to sort. Fortunately, glass has other local uses as well. Community partnerships can and are making these options work. Recent revelations of loads of glass being contaminated in Missoula provide an opportunity for all of us to learn how important it is that we follow program directions and encourage our friends and neighbors to do the same. For glass and all recycling, the better job we do, the more valuable the recyclable resource we create together as a community. A 2004 study by the Montana Department of Environmental Quality found that recycling provided nearly $90 million in revenue and sustained over 300 full-time jobs in Montana. Montana recycled or diverted 350,000 tons, or 22% of the 1.6 million tons of municipal waste generated in 2012. In 2003, the number was only 15%. There's much more to be done with recycling in our homes, businesses, communities. Together, we can continue to further reduce waste and put more resources to good use in Montana with recycling. I'm Matt Elsesser with Recycle Montana. Learn more about recycling online at recyclemontana.org. Have a great evening and keep recycling, Montana.
Matt Elsesser is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.